Last week on Rock Under Fire, where was Pat? Where can he be found? I'm here, guys. I'm back. And this is Rock Under Fire. Mikey D, what's up, man? Glad to be back.
We are back, and we are a cast of two again.
Yeah, no stick tonight.
No stick tonight. Hey, you know what? It's whoever shows up, that's the cast.
I apologize to you guys and to our fans. I was sick as a dog last night. You kids out there listening, don't go out drinking the night before you got to do a podcast. At least don't go out drinking to the excess that I went out drinking.
Yeah, in fact, the last time I saw you was that night.
Yeah. That's Saturday night.
I have not seen you since then. And we haven't really talked.
No.
A few random words through text messages and stuff. So I kind of feel like this is Regis and Kathy Lee, where they don't talk before the show and they just kind of get on and say, well, what's going on in your life?
Well, I was drunk. Here's my Regis. I just peeked the soundboard. What's shaking, man? What's going on? You know what? I got to jump right in because I cannot believe I didn't make it last week. And you know me, I wanted to talk about Walter Becker.
No, I believe it.
my man, Walter Becker.
If you saw Pat when I saw him that Saturday night, you'd believe why he wasn't around.
You knew why he wasn't going to be here. My man, Walter Becker, died, man. What can I say about Steely Dan? Come on. I know there's so many fucking people out there that hate that band. It's this soggy fucking this and that and the other thing. Get the fuck. Those two guys have put together some of the greatest musicians on this fucking planet and produced some of the greatest music ever written. It's just, they didn't give a fuck about their lyrics, much like Frank Zappa back in the day. They didn't care what he was saying. Everyone's gone to the movies. It's basically talking about a fucking child molester trying to get a kid into the basement and fucking watching some movies. You know, it's fucking ridiculous. They don't care about their lyrics, but the music. The music, come on, Jeff Skunk Baxter, give me a fucking break, man.
Yeah.
And Becker, you know, Becker was there. He produced this. He, you know, him and Fagan just,
yeah.
My boy, man. I lost heroes upon heroes.
You're having a rough year.
Greg Allman, fucking Walter Becker, Chris Cornell. I'm like, holy shit.
You're having a bad year. Yeah. I mean, I can't say much to this because, you know, Stick and I already talked about it.
Yeah. I just wanted to throw that out there. You knew, everybody out there knew. Aaron down in Virginia Aaron, not Texas Aaron. Virginia Aaron, you know, he added a couple of things that we had to say about some song, you know, Desert Island songs. And he was shocked that I didn't pick Steely Dan. And I even said it in my notes. I went with the song being on a desert island. I went on the song that's going to last me the longest amount of time. And I went with Animals by Pink Floyd Animals. What song that, was it Dogs? Dogs.
Oh, okay. Aaron, yeah. Virginia, all right, I remember that. Yeah.
It was a 17-minute song, so I could get, you know, a nice chunk of time out of listening to that song if I had to listen to it every day for the rest of my life.
Right. I was thinking your cousin, because we have two of our biggest supporters are named Aaron.
Yeah.
And one is your cousin and, you know, Aaron, you know, Novak.
To make the difference between the two of them, we're going to call Texas Aaron Aaron, because that's a skit. It's a skit from Key and Peele. But the whole time I was in Texas, I kept calling him Aaron. So that's Aaron, and Virginia is Aaron.
Okay.
So that's my that's my little thing. I just had to throw a little shout out to Walter Becker, man. That's my boy.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what else to say. I lost for words. It's just been, for you, 2017 has been much worse than 2016 in that respect.
Yeah,
for
personally. Yeah, from the personal standpoint. Yeah, I mean, hey, I dug Bowie. You know, I dug Bowie. I loved Prince, but I mean, this is the one that hits close to home. You know, both of them, all three of them, I should say. What do you got, man? Anything going on? What's going on?
Oh, man, I want to rant on Ticketmaster tonight.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but I guess other things. What else is going on? Did anybody die this week? It's like every show, man. Speaking of Becker,
what do you call it? I can't think of his name. Oh, Charles Bradley, that's what that dude's name is. This old soul singer there, right? Big disciple of the James Brown,
Screaming Eagle of Soul.
Yeah, the big disciple of Jim. So somebody did die, actually.
It was a death. But and the big news, if you're a Bob Dylan fan,
they
finally announced officially his bootleg series volume 13. This is a bootleg series thing that's been going on. They've been releasing these sets since 1991, where they release volumes 1 through 3, and then like every 3 years or so, they'll release a new volume. Well, they'll go in the vaults and pick out into the archives and pick out live things and unreleased things and go through various different periods of Dylan's career. And Dylan being the model chameleon artist who goes through these periods.
Probably more so than any other artist, right, in history.
He made it okay.
Yeah.
You know, he did for music what Picasso did for art.
Yeah.
Just that long, voluminous period, voluminous catalog. People like Prince and Bowie, Elvis Costello,
yeah.
Neil Young.
That script, they all followed that script.
And it's not exclusive to music, man. There are periods of art.
Writers. Sure.
Directors. I mean, Woody Allen, he's one of them.
Oh, God,
you know?
I'm not a big fan of Woody Allen, but you're right. He had his moment.
So, yeah, man. So the bootleg series volume 13 is going to comprise 1978 to 1981, otherwise known as his gospel period, when Bob found Jesus. He was a born-again Christian, you know, and he did his three albums of quote-unquote gospel music. So it was really rejected by fans at first. It was one of the many times an artist pissed off their audience.
Yeah,
and Bob Dylan
backlash.
Is the first person to really, well, one of the first people, in at least in pop music, to piss off his audience. And looking back historically, there's a lot of value in these recordings, and I'm looking forward to this. I passed on, like, I don't buy every bootleg series that comes out. There was like one or two in the last four that I was just like, I don't need that. And especially just the price. The price was like, it was like crazy, crazy. Like the Basement Tapes, I never got that. It was like $150 and it was like 10 discs. And then they sold like an abbreviated version of it for like two discs for $18.99. And I didn't even buy that because a lot of the stuff that was on the abbreviated version was stuff that I already had.
Mm.
And they kind of catered to, I guess, the commerciality of like what is most accessible rather than really going into that collection and picking out the rare gems and putting it on the abbreviated version.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I kind of passed on that. So yeah, this is a good thing.
You know, that falls right into line with him also being on the cover of the Village Voice, the final issue of the Village Voice.
Yeah, the last print edition of the Village Voice. This was like a staple in my life from like 1989 to about 2010. And then they kind of went, they changed management, and as far as like with digital print kind of making this lasting negative effect on actual tangible media.
Yeah, you don't see people. I used to read a newspaper every morning sitting in a diner or a cafe, wherever I was, and in my work truck at the time I was a driver. I always had a newspaper with me, always. It's gone. I haven't read that's not true. I shouldn't say that because I bought a New York Post. Wanted to read up on the Yankees a little bit more in depth. I wanted to read what the beat writers had to say. But the internet has killed the newspaper.
And if you notice, anytime you pick up any of these publications, whether it be a music magazine, entertainment magazine, newspapers, they're thin.
Oh,
they thin out. The paper has changed. Everybody's cutting corners.
Yeah.
The size
shrunk.
The paper is shorter. They've trimmed it all. And I just stopped getting it. And obviously, it's not very available in New Jersey.
Yeah,
and I kind of stopped going into the city the way I used to. I don't get into New York City nearly as much as I used to. So it's just something. It was like this element of my life that disappeared.
Mm.
Even though I do have the app on my phone. I have it, you know, it's, I do check it out once in a while, but it's not like every Wednesday morning I would go and I would pick up a voice.
I got a lot of respect for the publication. I just, you know, it was never, I hung out in the city a lot, but I never really was down there as much as I would, you know, let me pick up the Village Voice. It never happened that way for me, but you gotta take your hat off to them. You know, they were the what's happening in New York, publication, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I threw that in there because, you know, Dylan, you threw that Dylan thing right out there. And I was like, oh, I can. You know what? Another thing I just read that you posted, I had a very busy weekend. I didn't realize that Vandenberg, Adrian Vandenberg's coming back out, huh?
Yeah, this is his second album.
I'm excited. I liked him, man. Remember that song, This Broken Heart? Broken Heart?
Burning Heart.
Burning Heart. Burning Heart. That's what it was. Not Broken Heart. Burning Heart. I love that tune, man. The guitar work on it was so cool. Classically influenced.
Yeah, if I have to pick an underrated guitarist, it's him. He's one of my favorite guitarists. And
didn't he do, correct me if I'm wrong, but he recorded a lot of like David Coverdale's, like the Whitesnake record, right? And then didn't get credit for it or didn't tour with him, like got fired right after they recorded it?
I don't know who recorded on that album. I think he was on one or two. Why am I drawing a
Vivian
blank?
Campbell?
Obviously the one with like Here I Go Again.
That was Vivian Campbell, I think, on that record, wasn't it?
No, I think it was still Sykes. I think Sykes was on the record. Sykes. And that was when he left, and he got a totally new band. I don't know the details of it, but
for some reason, I thought Vandenberg played with him. But
Still
of
the Night, that's a song.
Right, Still of the Night, yeah.
I don't think Vandenberg's on an album, although the solo on Here I Go Again always sounded suspiciously like Adrian Vandenberg to me. And to this day, I always meant just lazy. I'm just lazy about it. We could Google it, but just wanted to find out who actually played the guitar solo on Here I Go Again. On the 1987 record, not the original Here I Go Again, the 87 record that came out.
That was the later, they redid it, basically.
Yeah, and that sounds like Adrian Vandenberg, but I was told, I think the understanding at the time was that, nah, he's not on the record. He might be, I don't know.
You know, there's another thing, I don't know if you saw the conversation I had. We picked up a fan out of London. I don't know if you saw it on the Facebook app or not on your phone, but he was asking me about the Gruen episode and, you know, when we recorded it, blah, blah, blah. And I got back to him kind of immediately and he was like really appreciative of that. And, like followed us and
cool.
Spread the word out in London. So, hey, man.
Welcome aboard, London.
Yes, to our folks across the pond, man. Welcome.
I have some people in London that I correspond with regarding my book project that I don't reveal the details of. Not on the air, at least.
The inner circle, the inner sanctum, we know about this book.
Yeah, but there is one of the books I'm working on, and there are some people in London that I kind of correspond with and trade information and get information and back and forth. So
that was a cool thing. I mean, he was happy that we got back to him so soon, and, you know, it was a nice little conversation. Good dude. We welcome him.
Awesome.
I won't mention his name. You know, we don't usually like to mention everybody's name, but you know who you are, man.
To our one London fan.
Hey, you all need one fan to begin with.
What was
with
the episode he liked?
Bob Gruen. Let me call it up because he's a photographer, if I'm not mistaken. And
all right, well, London fan, if you're out there, I'm happy that you found the Bob Gruen episode. I'm more curious as to how you found us. But awesome. All the better. Yeah, we did that. We did that. If you're a photographer, we did that. And I'll speak to this.
His name is Paul.
Okay, Paul. If you're a photographer, we did that episode back in the spring. That was an episode where originally I wanted to do an episode on the importance of photography and the role of photography in rock and roll music throughout the history of rock and roll. It's a medium that has completely 100% lent itself to rock and roll. Rock and roll would not be anything nearly the mythic, legendary entity that it has been in pop culture over the last 50 years had it not been for the photographers. You scratch the surface, man. The images.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Johnny Cash with his middle finger up. You know, Paul Simonon of The Clash smashing that bass on the stage. The London Calling.
Tina Turner was my favorite picture, man.
Right. John Lennon with the New York City shirt.
Iconic.
Just the images, man, that the photographers have captured and given to us and lent itself to the myth and legend of rock and roll music. And we did that. We were going to do that episode, and luckily, we were fortunate to have Bob Gruen join us for that show. And it became more about Bob than it did about rock and roll photography, but he is one of the major players.
He had some good stories in it. You know, it's funny because we had technical difficulties that morning, too. Remember that?
We were having
recording issues. Mike was in a complete panic, man. He's like, shit, what are we going to do? Turns out we had to upload new drivers.
Yeah.
For the fucking soundboard. But anyway, his name is Paul.
Okay.
And he found us on YouTube. He says, top job. He's a student in the UK. He's writing a dissertation on Bob, and he wanted to know what the recording date was. So I look back on our
wow, on so he used us as a, he's in our, in his, I guess he put us in his sources or
maybe,
works
or site. Citing awesome. Us, maybe. That's cool. Wow. But, you know, he says, I'm sorry if I'm being an ass, which you're clearly
not. You're being
not.
A total ass.
He couldn't find it on the site. So I went back on iTunes because the iTunes site's a little more user-friendly, I think. Mm-hmm. And it just showed the date immediately. It was May 1st. I knew it was somewhere in that area. It might have even been April because it hit iTunes on May 1st. Mm-hmm. But May 1st is what I had said.
More than the fact that we have a new listener, I'm more honored for the fact that he used us.
Sure,
that he
man.
Used our interview as a source.
Absolutely.
For his dissertation. That's pretty.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool, man.
He said, hey, you got a new fan in the UK. Best wishes.
Because the whole show, the whole idea of this show, like I wanted this show to be part laid back, just very chill, a lot of jokes, craziness. But I also wanted it to be half academic.
And serious. You know? And you know, you want people
and
to
I always
kind of
like wanted it to be like part Charlie Rose and part Howard Stern, you know? So
Charlie Stern here. This is Charlie Stern coming in from the era up north there, up in Rhode Island. Charlie Stern.
Doro Pesh. Doro Pesh is playing. Well, I guess those shows are over by now, but it was just like a 2-week run of shows.
Year, right? Yeah.
5 or 6 shows where she did Triumph and Agony in its entirety, and that is the last Warlock album. They only made a handful of records in the mid-80s, and they were the last. Everybody that knows me knows that how I kind of go on my little metal tangent on how I quote-unquote outgrew metal. You know, my big snobby Mikey D that comes out that discovered Bob Dylan in 1980-something and stopped listening to metal in favor of things like R.E.M. and Bob Dylan and a whole bunch of pretentious stuff, you know. So Warlock was the absolute last metal band that grabbed me by the balls. Mm-hmm. And that I really got into.
Let's not take away from the fact that she's fucking hot, too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, you know what? Honestly, I was never into Doro Pesh that
way. I loved her, boy.
Just because she had a really scary voice, those man.
Tight-ass leather really pants she was always wearing. And Doro, no disrespect. I know you liked us on Twitter. And you,
yeah, Doro
and,
Doro and shared
you,
Doro Pesh
shared
our
tweet
our
stuff. No disrespect to anybody in her camp. You are a beautiful woman.
Doro, never mind, Doro. Never mind. I'm just glad that you were out there doing your music. Triumph and Agony, probably, in my opinion, the last... No, not the last great metal album. not the last great metal album of the 80s. That would go to Operation Mindcrime, in my opinion.
I like that, man.
That was 1988.
That's a good one. I like that. That's a great record.
Because I think Triumph and Agony was 87.
So. We love concept albums, you and I.
Yes.
And to just, wow, man.
Absolutely.
You just blew me away there, dude. That was a good one. Operation Mindcrime for Mikey D. Ding, 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 ding.
Now I just totally blew my whole thing. No.
We're thanking Doro.
No, because Triumph and Agony was not the last metal album I was into. It was Operation Mindcrime.
It's all right. We still got
love. No, wait, duh. Fucking brain fart, man. Brain fart. The last band that I was into. Okay, so I'm good. I
you
stand
good.
By my statements.
You
fuck you
good.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else? Oh yeah, I was a guest for our Rock Under Fire listeners. I was a guest on another podcast last week called the Great Albums Podcast. So if anybody's interested in listening to me yap away about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, it's called the Great Albums Podcast. You'll find them on iTunes just like us. They're big. You know,
yeah,
we're not
yeah,
even,
yeah,
I mean,
them.
Like, we're not even on the map in terms of, like, the top 200 iTunes podcast rated according to popularity and downloads. We're not even on the map when it comes to the 200. I don't mind talking about this. I don't mind
That's
saying
fine.
This because I'm not being negative about our show. It's facts are facts. We are a growing podcast, you know, trying to get a bigger audience.
We didn't grow as quickly as any of us would have liked.
These guys are rated number 27.
That's huge.
That's a big thing. That is a big thing, but I'm a fan of the show, and I've listened to these guys for a little over a year now, and through some correspondence on one of their past shows, I ended up on their show, So, which was pretty cool. I just wanted to give them a shout out and a plug and a thank you to those guys. What else did I? There was something else I wanted to say, but whatever. Let's let it fly.
You were talking about Ticketmaster.
Ugh. Get a sip of Coke here.
Snorting Coke, what?
A sip.
Oh, a sip of Coke.
Coca-Cola, man.
Okay.
Yeah. Ticketmaster, man. Ticketmaster.
Up to their old fucking
what's
tricks,
bothering
right?
me more about Ticketmaster than anything is the lack of discussion about Ticketmaster in the media. And it's because Ticketmaster is, you know, the corporate media. Ticketmaster has their own table at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Okay, so this is why you're not going to see Rolling Stone magazine going after Ticketmaster. You're not going to see any of the corporate magazines and corporate publications going after Ticketmaster, talking about the corruption of Ticketmaster and how out of fucking control that they have become.
They are fucking disgusting. And the band that hammered them the most, I saw them that tour, was Pearl Jam. The fucking ticket was like, you know, the size of my iPhone 7 Plus. It wasn't Ticketmaster. It was a Randall's Island show. That's the other fucking thing, is that they got their hooks in to these fucking venues. It's all fucking money.
Yeah.
$600 for a fucking ticket, or even a fucking place in line to get a ticket, is just fucking absurd, ridiculous. They're a bunch of fucking thieves, all of them. Yeah. And I wish them nothing but the fucking worst. May your fucking hemorrhoids catch fire. I fucking can't stand that company.
What you do see is any part of, like, I hate this term, but it's true, the mainstream media, anytime you see them talking about ticket prices and ticket sales, they don't go after Ticketmaster. They kind of blame the artist. Taylor Swift is charging $10,000 for her tickets. Bruce Springsteen is charging $8,000.
No, he's not.
Bruce Springsteen is not charging $8,000 for tickets. Okay. The agencies, the scalping agencies that Ticketmaster funnels their tickets over to, charge $8,000 for the tickets.
And that
so this
includes
is our problem.
The fucking StubHubs of the fucking world.
This is the problem.
A face value fucking ticket for a Bruce show was probably about, okay, 65, let's say 65, even 100 bucks. But by the time somebody gets it on StubHub and that fucking ticket is now, like you say, $6,000, $5,000 fucking dollars, it's absurd. And right. Sporting events are the same fucking way. I know we're not a sports podcast, but it's the same goddamn thing. To get a ticket to a Yankee game is fucking insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely insane. Live Nation, StubHub, they're all fucking in cahoots together.
Live Nation owns Ticketmaster, I believe.
They're all fucking in cahoots together.
Yeah.
It's, you know, and again, Pearl Jam fucking really tried to fight the good fight with them. But they, you know, you're fighting a fucking corporation. And Pearl Jam at that point was on their second record. So, I mean, it's not like they were what they are now. I really wish they would have kept going at them, because maybe they could have made a dent. A band
well,
like they, that
I
really
mean, Pearl Jam,
voice.
Pearl Jam, like Ticketmaster, Pearl Jam became part of the establishment. So, you know,
like it or not, you're right.
There's nothing. I mean, Will Durant, probably my favorite historian, basically said that there's nothing in socialism or communism that a little money won't cure.
Yeah.
So once you taste that money,
yeah,
it's, you know, you become
they move
the establishment,
on to other problems.
And you become everything that you once railed against. Hey, I got no problem with this state, you know, Eddie Vedder's, his status as an elder statesman now, man. That's I got no problem with that at all. But, you know, Live Nation, which basically they own Ticketmaster, they have a fucking monopoly.
Yeah.
They own most of, like, all of the major venues.
Yeah. PNC Arts Center is a Live Nation event.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they manage the artists in a way that they dictate what the rules are. They act as the promoter. They control the primary market. And unfortunately, now they control the secondary market. So, you know, it's the secondary market is the scalpers.
Mm-hmm.
This is nothing new. Ticketmaster's been having this problem since the 80s.
Decades.
But during the 80s, they were not part of, they were not in cahoots with the scalpers.
Right.
You know, it was just,
they were
just
trying to fight scalpers at that point, because they wanted, it was taking money out of their pockets.
Yeah, and it became a case of, you know, like they say, if you can't beat them, join them.
Sure, that's exactly what they fucking did. Bunch of fucking scumbags.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, you know, you knew this was going to be a hot topic with
yeah.
me. I can't stand these fucking people.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that now they talk about. The big thing now is the bots.
Yeah.
The bots that buy up all these tickets.
Which didn't exist in the 80s, so it's a bunch of it's a crock of shit.
Right.
Because you were on a phone at that point.
Right.
Yet somebody with an auto dialer was calling like fucking 900 times, so that's the person that got through, a scalper. Mm-hmm. But now it's bots. And so you're going to tell me there's a room full of fucking people on a computer just
there
fucking...
Was at the time. Well, you know.
Right. You know, it's fucking, you know, it's a bot. We have to make sure you're not a bot. Meanwhile, 6 minutes went by, and now your fucking, your ticket in the fucking good section is upstairs.
Yeah.
The scalper got those fucking good tickets, though. Him and his bot. I got your bot right here, right between my fucking legs.
Yeah, well, a guy named Ken Lawson started this company called Wise Guy Tickets. Does that ring a bell?
Like, not at all, no.
In the early 90s. And they were, he was the guy that basically, he's the one that kind of, quote unquote, broke Ticketmaster. Which I say is kind of bullshit somebody needs to fucking bring Ticketmaster to its knees, man.
They're not
fucking
broken.
Control.
The last fucking thing is Ticketmaster is not broken. They are not broken.
But, you know, if you go back 15 years, 20, I don't say, let's say 15 years, at least back to the late 90s, when you would call before, when you still had that option of standing on a line.
Sure.
And going to CD World, Compact Disc World, yep. Where they had a Ticketmaster in the back.
Yep.
Or your local video store. The other option was to call over the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that even before the internet, man, where you could just go online, you would get nothing but a busy signal at that moment because...
They flooded the phone lines.
It would basically flood the phone lines with all of these people that are now, you know, bribing the sellers to... And they're like used car salesmen, just dirty, slimy, sleazy, swarmy sales.
Fucking comb
like, you know,
over with a fucking...
And they figured out how to get to the sellers. They know that they found out that there's a sequence of keys that you press down at the same time that automatically releases the tickets into a transaction. A transaction is automatically made. It's kind of like the equivalent of hitting send.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, the tickets are released. So it's like automatic transaction.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like all of a sudden the show's sold out. It's like, wait, I didn't sell. I sold maybe 10 to 10 people today. How is this thing sold out in a matter of minutes?
Minutes. You know? 2 minutes. Two minutes.
So.
The police is my other story with them. The reunion tour at the Garden, I ended up getting tickets like behind the stage, basically, from fucking 10 o'clock in the morning until 10:05. It took me to get those fucking to secure those tickets.
That's crazy.
I mean, the seats were good. You know, it's you're not looking for him jump. You know, to see the police jumping around and dancing. You were there for the music.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter that I was a little bit behind the stage. I don't care. But still. From 10 o'clock to 10:05 to secure those fucking tickets, and that's where my seats were. You're going to tell me that all those other fucking seats were sold before mine? Doubt it.
No, they're in a practice of selling maybe 10%. Now, I don't want to be irresponsible and call percentage. I'm just paraphrasing or just kind of, it's a very small percentage. If there's 20,000 seats in a venue, it's a very small percentage of those 20,000 seats that are actually being sold to the public.
Because you got corporate, you got radio station giveaways, you got the band securing tickets, the whole nine yards. I agree. Right. I don't disagree with that at all.
And that's part of that 10%, that like small percent. I want to say keep saying 10%, but I believe,
that's
and I'm again, I'm paraphrasing that 10%.
Right? It could be a little bit more.
I mean, in the case that got this guy busted in 2010, I believe, was 5%.
Wow.
5% that Disney, that he somehow got in on a meeting between Ticketmaster and Disney. And this was for a Hannah Montana concert.
Huh.
This is when Miley Cyrus was still going under the name Hannah Montana.
My niece went to that show. It was the best of both worlds. She did a Hannah Montana and Miley Cyrus, like two set type deal. And the Jonas Brothers opened up. My brother's got tickets for his kids. That's how I know about this.
Mm-hmm.
And what he went through to get those fucking tickets and what he paid for them. Please continue. How did he get into the room
like
with fucking Disney?
I have no idea, but it was something like 5%.
Is this a book?
But there are you could Google this guy's name, Ken Lawson.
Ken Lawson.
Yeah.
I'd like to fucking
and
read
he's
up
the
about
guy
this
that supposedly was the one that created the bots and developed the bots.
Wow.
And he was the one that had people working those phones in the
90s. He stuck it to the man.
And yeah. It's funny because now, you know, they got busted because they found out that like when they were, if that 5% of releasing 5% of the Hannah Montana tickets, they went, the agencies went ahead. Wise Guys went ahead that was the ticket agency at the time.
Yeah.
And sold these tickets that were never there, that they didn't have.
Holy
so
Christ.
There were all of these pissed off people, and one of them was the daughter of a senator. So the feds
that's
moved
problem.
On him, and they went up onto, they were found him in this 25th floor of this skyscraper in Century City. And he thought that they were there for the bankers, because this was when the whole fucking crash happened, yeah. You know, around 2008, 2009. And, but at anyway, I don't know who went to prison or how long, how much time he served. If I don't think he served any time. But now he's making a point of going after
the bots,
going after Ticketmaster, and just basically helping the feds and letting him in on the secrets. Think Leonardo DiCaprio at the end of Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can. I was just going to say that.
And he's in the process of
the best forger in the world now helps the FBI.
Yeah. So, but the bots were created. Now, this is where Ticketmaster is still.
Wait, I
got to
stop you for 1 second. The moral of that part of that whole story was don't fuck with a senator's kid, basically. That's how you're going to get anything done. You want to get something done? Go fuck with a senator's kid, and then you're going to get something done. The senator will move his fucking lazy, fucking fat, lethargic ass and fucking bring down the whole fucking world on you for fucking with his kid.
Yeah.
Rant over. It was in the back of my mind when you said that about a senator's fucking kid, and that's what caused that whole thing to crumble down.
It's like the Zeppelin II thing with Zeppelin II. And when Zeppelin II first came out, a guy named Robert Ludwig was the guy that mastered it. And he's a famous, you know, he masters fucking tons of records way back to the 60s, okay? And Eddie Kramer, I'm going off the fucking script here, but Eddie Kramer told him, make this as hot as you fucking can, okay? And he cut it, and the very first pressings, well, the Robert Ludwig pressing of Zeppelin II was so fucking fat. The bass and the drums was so fat and hot that if you had a shitty record player, a shitty turntable, it would skip.
No
so
shit.
A whole bunch of these things were skipping, man. And it was like, oh, fuck it. But,
I never
but
knew
it
that.
Took the daughter of Ahmet Erdogan of Atlantic.
Of Atlantic,
man,
yeah.
Whose record was fucking skipping, say, what is this fucking shit? Pull his fucking thing off the shelves. They went and they pulled fucking Zeppelin II off the shelves, man.
And they had to repress it, man.
Remaster it, man.
There's fucking power
and
for you.
And this is a massive, if you're an audiophile, man, the Zeppelin II Robert Ludwig master.
Can you still get that master?
You can get it for a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of fucking money.
Okay.
But they're out there.
Wow.
And it's a collector's. It's a massive collector's.
Could you imagine
item,
hearing
man.
That fucking bass on that? If it was, you know, like a hot bass or a hot drum, the Bono's drums like, on it?
If you have a shitty turntable, I guess.
Yeah. Ahmet's daughter.
But it also, it's supposedly the best sounding Zeppelin II, I guess. But, you know, that's, I don't care.
Whatever.
I'm not an audiophile that way.
Not me either.
But yeah, so, I mean, it kind of brings us into the present where Ticketmaster fucking has this. See, the thing with the bots, right? And everybody's talking about the bots. Anytime they try to address this shit with Ticketmaster, the bots are these things that flood.
They're computer-generated.
And it's not just Ticketmaster that tries to prevent the bots.
No,
they're
all over the
websites.
Internet. I mean, Google uses them to their advantage. It goes out and searches the internet and finds different things, and that's how their search engine works. It's so fast. And those bots are out there constantly. Picture them like little fucking spiders, just fucking electronic spiders just out there looking, searching.
Now here's the part that's mind-blowing, man. The part that's mind-blowing to me is that they developed that CAPTCHA system where when you get on Ticketmaster and you're about to like choose your seats or whatever, after you're about to complete your transaction, they put you through this, you see this image of like fuzzy and distorted letters, and you have to copy it exactly how you see it,
right?
And then you have to check that little box that says I am checking this box to prove that I am not a bot, right?
Yeah,
so I'm not a bot,
right?
Okay, you check this fucking box off. And what they found their way around that, they studied, they got a whole bunch of people like you and me to sit there and study these CAPTCHA images, and they found out that there's only so many of them. There's like maybe like 30,000 of them.
Oh, so you could write code.
It's not
to
an
fucking
endless
yeah.
fucking thing.
Hackers,
so they
are
were
right
taking
on that.
Screenshots of those images, every image, and they put it into a JPEG file. From there, these bots studied.
Wow.
They learned the images.
Holy shit.
And they found their way through that, and then they were enabled to get the tickets again.
Wow.
And then Ticketmaster later claimed that they were hacked, that the CAPTCHA system was hacked. It was not hacked. It was basically
beaten.
Like the computer found a way to it read it and respond to it like a human. So that's
fucking Terminator fucking 2 shit coming up here.
Yeah. This is, in fact, real life, folks. So now you have, it brings us into the present where you have this thing, and it, again, it's I've only seen it used in the last year or so, in the last couple of months. It's called the Verified Fan Program, and they're using it for Taylor Swift, I believe, and they're using it for Bruce Springsteen's Bruce on Broadway thing, the Springsteen on Broadway. And they're saying, well, this will authenticate you, and this will prove that you're a fan, and this is out to beat the bots. You know what Rolling Stone does? Rolling Stone puts out a fucking article a couple weeks ago, right after the Springsteen tickets went on sale. Okay, this was supposed to stop the bots. Bruce tickets go on sale. They're fucking sold out like that.
Minutes.
Okay? Within an hour of that, StubHub has a whole shitload of seats for every fucking night. Okay? So, and then Rolling Stone runs an article that says Bruce beats the bots. And then he adds another 3 months of shows. Okay? So he goes from 40 shows to 80 shows, 79, 80 shows, whatever it is. Bullshit. Bullshit.
Bullshit.
What's happening is, see, Ticketmaster needs the bots. So where something, like, if they know something's not going to sell out, the bots kind of buy those tickets up and makes it a sellout. So they can, in turn, charge
extra.
Astronomical prices. The fucking what do they call it? The scalpers.
Yeah.
Right. They are no longer two separate entities. The primary market and the secondary market. They're in fucking cahoots
Jesus
with each
Christ.
Other. Now, man. Ticketmaster. Now this is where I may be offline, but hey, I have all the fucking evidence I need to know that Ticketmaster is getting a cut of this, man. And somebody needs to fucking investigate them. And why is Ticketmaster not under investigation? Why it's creepy the way the media, everybody is just kind of silently just kind of skirts to it's Bruce Springsteen's fault. It's Taylor Swift's fault.
And Rolling
it's
Stone
the artist's fault.
And Rolling Stone commends him for fucking adding all kinds of
they give
of
him
fucking
a table at
the
Rock and
Bots.
Roll Hall of Fame, man.
Yeah.
The Verified Fan Program is bullshit. What that does is basically make us feel like they're doing something.
We're
about
special.
It. We designed this program
for you.
So we can beat the bots. And it'll put the tickets into the hands of the fans. But somehow StubHub has like 100 tickets per show. Okay? Well,
what's the
it's only 100 tickets.
Yeah, but
it's
what's
not
that theater
500
hold?
Tickets. It's 2500? Fucking 900 people in the theater.
Yeah, maybe not even 2,500. It is 900 to 1,000
okay.
people.
And it's every show. I checked, man.
Wow.
I went online. I checked that shit. They got tickets. They got like 100 tickets per show.
That's fucking insane.
Now,
and it's a fake name. This is Joe Smith from fucking wherever, and he's going to send them to you. Or the best is that you can download them and print them immediately. So you tell me who owns that fucking ticket.
Yeah.
And there's a disclaimer. These tickets were bought already. They are being resold by X, so they may be more than what the face value was.
And I want to know if, like, well, you know, I guess it's not old enough, but the Verified Fan Program, they only kind of just happened to put it out and implement it for shows that they kind of already know are going to sell out. So it's like, well, we don't really need the bots to buy up all the tickets because we know this is going to sell out. But we'll funnel some off to the bots anyway because we're going to profit astronomically from this shit. You know what I mean?
Bruce on Broadway?
Yeah.
Of course they're going to fucking
profit
on that.
I don't know. What my question is, like, it's not so much a question. It's just kind of a reaction. Like, you know, do I have solutions? No. But why? I mean, you would think that somebody like the mega players, man, the mega artists like Springsteen, the Rolling Stones, U2, Paul McCartney would try to at least take Ticketmaster on, man.
Yeah, take a look at him or something.
The only one that really spoke out in the last since Vedder was Bruce, and that was like 5 years ago, and they kind of developed this Tickets Now program, which is like their own secondary market. But again, all you're doing is basically fucking funneling the tickets off to the agency.
Greased his palm a little bit. There you go, Bruce. Go away.
It's our sister site.
Yeah.
We don't have any tickets, but our sister site has some.
We own it.
You know, five times the cost, five times face value.
I know what I paid for Billy Joel tickets off of StubHub, and I know what they should go for, and it, you know, at Madison Square Garden, and it's the fucking the jack up there is just fucking insane.
Yeah,
hundreds and hundreds of dollars, man, per ticket, per fucking ticket.
I mean, it wasn't until I put two and two together to figure out like what's going on here. I really didn't think too much about it. Shame on me, man. Shame on me, man. Fucking smack me upside the head.
Take you outside and flog
but
you.
For years, man, I would go on Ticketmaster and like there was a time where I could go on Ticketmaster and successfully buy a ticket from Ticketmaster and still be on the website, on the Ticketmaster website at the end.
Yeah.
You know? And then
with
like
a profile,
if I wanted to,
and they had your credit card
exactly.
information all set, yeah.
Right. And still buy it for what the cost of the ticket was. You know, where and like I'd say like the like four out of the last five times I bought something from Ticketmaster, I was immediately told we're redirecting you to our sister site, Stub something something hub or ticket this or ticket this, you know, and where I was offered so many tickets for way over face value. And well, you want this tickets, man? You want these tickets? Or do you not want? They basically got you by the balls.
Their surcharges are fucking crazy.
The surcharge alone, man. The
$25
surcharge alone.
What the fuck is that? So, I think that was where Eddie was really fighting the most. You know, that was his war, was the surcharges that were just taking tickets out of fans' hands.
That's what that was about, right?
Yeah, I believe that was
if
the
only
main
he
fight.
Knew, man, that 15, 20 years later, that it
would
be about
become.
Bots.
Yeah. The show about bots.
So this
That's
is, I mean, I, there's no punchline. There's no, I have no solution. I don't have this big answer. I don't know if anybody was waiting for me to come up with some big release or something.
We're
like,
behind you, Mikey D.
Some exhale moment where I offer something for my rant.
Grab your torch and pitchfork. We're going after Ticketmaster.
Somebody's got to bring Ticketmaster to its knees. It's not going to be me.
Not going to be me.
I don't have.
I got fucking more important things to do. I got a mortgage.
I don't have the resources to bring Ticketmaster to its fucking knees.
Our fans, you guys, this is a calling. Go after
like,
Ticketmaster.
Can't Bruce like sell his own tickets?
Yeah.
I mean,
set up your own website.
Sure,
it is.
I don't understand.
Set up your own
business.
Website.
I don't understand money.
Buy some server space. Why not?
I was never good at math. I didn't do my algebra homework. It took me five fucking times to pass algebra in college.
Well, at that point, then you have to take into consideration that he doesn't have a deal with the venue. You know, Bruce would be playing fucking Jersey Lanes and fucking Elizabeth. He's not going to be playing
the
Garden
Tavern, man. You know,
he's not going to be playing the Garden.
Dave's not
going to
complain if
Dave won't complain about Bruce being at the Garden.
Come to his bar.
Forge might.
He might have to play there for him. Might have to do a year residency.
A year residency. Yeah.
I don't know. You guys got answers. Give us some feedback. Give us some feedback. Leave us your comments. And Stick Nixon has just walked in. He just showed his face.
He
walked straight to the bathroom right at the end of our show, man.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
He said hello.
RockUnderFire.com, Rock Under Fire on Facebook, Rock Under Fire on YouTube, and Stitcher, and iTunes.
Twitter.
That's episode 32.
See you
soon. We'll see you next time.
Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me.